Good morning, everybody. All right. I want to make sure you're awake. Thank you, Kyle, for inviting me here, and Ray, wherever you are. Thank you for allowing me to share with you what do we know about teamwork? What does the science tell us about teamwork? And so what I'd like to do in the next 40 minutes or so is give you a world's tour. What is it that we know about teamwork? What evidence we have about what works in teams and in healthcare teams as well? So just about everything that I'm going to tell you this morning has been published or will be published. So there's my email. And those of you who want more information about what I'm going to tell you this morning, please feel free to send me an email, and I'll send you papers, and I will also share this presentation in case you're interested. As you can tell, I'm not from Texas. I'm from Lima, Peru. I've been in this country 40 years, and what I can tell you is that this accent will not go away in the next hour. So hopefully by now you get used to it. So everybody ready? Everybody got used to my, all right. So a few takeaways. I've given this presentation in primary care several times, and it really resonates with the audience, with you. So I hope that at least you'll have three or four very practical things to take. I agree with Kyle when he said that there's nothing great like a conference that you go, a meeting that you go, and you get two or three practical messages. I hope I have here 10 practical messages for you, but and I will highlight a few of those. But I want to give you a sense of what's coming. Essentially, I want to give you a common language, maybe to when you go back to your practices, to your units, to your healthcare systems, yeah, you can talk about teamwork in this way, which I'm going to describe. I'm going to give you some advice about how to promote teamwork, what works, what doesn't work, especially in healthcare. And like I said, everything here is evidence-based. I'm going to share with you about 23 meta-analyses that have been done in this area. Okay. So let me give you a tour of who cares. Who cares about teamwork? Who cares about team performance? And there are a number of industries. It's not only healthcare, by the way. And the first one is the military. And in fact, I will tell you that I started my career with the military. I was hired in 1984, as I was finishing my PhD, I was hired by the Navy. And my job was to create a team performance laboratory. In 1984, by the time I left the Navy, I was a research psychologist, civilian. I was a one-man operation for a few years, and by the time I left in 1999, there were 45 to 50 PhDs studying team performance, team decision-making, and the like. So the military, till today, is the big funder, investor of teamwork. The second industry that's very much interested in is the airlines. When you go home, when you came here, when you go on vacation, when you get on a plane, luckily the airlines believe that teamwork is paramount to safety. And so most of the airlines have a program or two. Some of you might have heard CRM, crew resource management, and that's what they use to train the flight deck, air traffic controllers, and flight attendants in teamwork. So till today, the airlines continue to support that. One of the reasons I moved to Houston after living in Orlando for 30 years is the oil and gas. So some of you might say, why oil and gas? Well, thank God we don't have many of these, but every time, for example, there's a hurricane that goes through the Gulf of Mexico, you know, the oil industries have to evacuate very quickly hundreds of people, and then bring it back very quickly as well. So collaboration, coordination between offshore and onshore is what they're seeking. I can tell you I've been on an oil rig for 3 days, which was about 2 days too long. There are no bars at the oil rigs. So that's another industry. Of course, healthcare. I can tell you another reason I moved to Houston with the Texas Medical Center. There's really an obsession in healthcare with teamwork, and rightly so. All of you probably know the 99 report, the IOM report that showed the human error is a big problem. And so about 75% of what I do these days over the last 20 years since the IOM report is healthcare. I spend a lot of time in schools of medicine, a lot of times in healthcare systems, helping organizations and schools teach teamwork or diagnose teamwork in their organizations. The final one I want to tell you, which is fascinating work I'm doing right now, is another reason I moved to Houston, is NASA. So this is fascinating to me. If we go to Mars in 2035, we're going to send a team. This team is going to be four individuals as it's programmed now. It's probably going to be multicultural. There'll be a Russian, maybe a Japanese, one female as it's programmed now. And they're going to endure, and it's an endurance, a 30-month journey. It's going to take 10 months to get to Mars. They're going to research, live there 8, 9, 10 months, and 10 months to come back. And so NASA has created a branch completely devoted to understanding team cohesion. And so there's a lot of investment now coming out from NASA about how do you promote team cohesion, how do you maintain, especially when you have a team that is in a very confined environment. I can tell you very quickly, I have interviewed about 15, 16 astronauts that have been in the International Space Station for more than 3 months. None of them will volunteer to go to Mars, by the way. And the reason is, this is interesting to me, I hope to you too. One is, from the International Space Station, they can Skype home, so with a one-second delay, so they can talk to their loved ones, to their kids, to their spouses, almost real time, on a daily basis. The communication lag from here to Mars is going to be 40 minutes. I say hi to Kyle, it takes 20 minutes to get to him, and his response another 20 minutes to get back to me. So that's a huge problem. And the second one, which is, as a psychologist, I can tell you is very fascinating to me, that from the International Space Station, they can see Earth. It's beautiful pictures that we see on TV or on magazines, right? Connection. From Mars, Earth is just going to be a little dot. Complete isolation. So one of the things that I'm working with NASA is, how do we select team members for this kind of journey? So team composition, team staffing, which I want to say something about, is paramount to the success of this mission going to Mars. And there are other industries, but I just want to give you where is the interest coming and where is the science coming. It's coming from all these industries. So this science has been going on for 35 years, 45 years. In fact, I forgot to mention that the incident that led the military to invest heavily in teamwork was, some of you might remember this, that in 1988, the USS Vincennes shot down by mistake an Iranian Airbus. 234 people died. So for long story short, Congress said, how can we make a mistake like this? And Congress allocated in 1990 a huge amount of money to try to understand team decision making and stress. So the science has been studying experts in the real world, doing real things. Okay. So now we have 38 years of this. So now we have the benefit, like I said earlier, of meta-analysis. So there are a number of things I want to share with you why you should care about teamwork. In 2008, Jeff Lepine published the first meta-analysis that really made a connection between team processes and team performance. In other words, If your team exhibit this effective team processes, which I'm going to tell you, it leads to better performance. So again, the first connection. The second bullet is probably the most important. This is a meta-analysis I did with my students, published in the Journal of Applied Psychology. This is a meta-analysis of medical team training. So we collected 141 evaluations of medical team training across the world. What do we find? We found two things. We found hospitals that deploy teamwork training of some sort, okay? Hospitals that deploy teamwork training versus the hospitals that did not, medical errors was reduced by 18%, those hospitals that deployed teamwork training. But more importantly, those same hospitals not only have less medical errors, but their mortality was reduced compared to the ones that did not deploy. So this is the first connection that we have, that teamwork, team performance, leads to better clinical outcomes. Okay. Again, I can send you a copy of the article, but it's getting a lot of attention in hospitals, because now when chief financial officers ask, what is the ROI on deploying team training in my hospital? I don't know, we're gonna get benefits. Here's some evidence of that evidence. Wall Street has been doing a lot of work too in improving collaboration, and they're beginning to find that when you have collaboration, revenue increases in those units. Google, some of you might have seen this already, but Google in 2016 did a study trying to understand what makes their teams effective, and I'm going to tell you what they found. Okay, I'm going to give quick observations. I'm going to go into the science. I'm going to tell you what effective teams do, a checklist, and then I'll give you advice. Hopefully, I'll have enough time for all that. So, observation number one, very quickly, teams are here to stay. I won't spend a lot of time on this. The bottom line is most organizations are shifting the way they're structured to be team-based. So it's not only healthcare, it's all over. A corporate world is beginning to shift how they're designed, how they reward their individuals. It's more team-based and so forth. But there are a number of studies here that basically show that, you know, essentially teams are here to stay. Unfortunately, many teams don't perform effectively. As a matter of fact, if I ask you, how many of you have been in teams that have been that really suck? And I love this thing because, you know, when teams don't work well, when you're in a team that you don't feel good about, it sucks the energy out of you. You don't want to be there. You don't want to be with them. You avoid them. You're calling sick. You do whatever. And I love to quote this interesting study by Boothby that basically found that the intensity of shared experiences, whether good or bad, are always amplified. So when you get to your room this tonight, eat a chocolate by yourself. It's not the same when you eat the chocolate with somebody else. And it's certainly the same thing goes for beer, right? That's why you want somebody else drinking with you. So this is what happens when you have a bad team. I'm going to say this several times. What happens in the C-suite matters, of course, a hell of a lot. This should be a no-brainer, right? So top leaders, what they do, what they say, what they think permeates the organization. And I'm going to emphasize this very much. Finally, observation four, you know, my experience is that effective teams do care about each other. They care about their patients, they care about their teammates, they care about the family, they care about who is around them. And I'm gonna tell you what the secret is. And finally, some of you might be saying, why are we studying this thing? Don't we know enough about teamwork? Well, I'm gonna show you a graph. Our science, when we look at teams, we have to worry about a number of variables. Look at this framework. So this is just The bullets that you see under each of the boxes is just some exemplars of what are the variables that we need to worry when we study teams. So it's about how the task structure, how the motivation that people have, your characteristics, the leadership, so forth and so on. So that's why this is a complex issue. And as we're gonna see, sometimes teamwork is implicit. There's no verbal communication. When a pilot does this or this, he or she is communicating something. And so that's what we need to capture when we study teams. Okay, so 35 years, lots of data out there. So now let me begin to tell you a few things about the science of teamwork. What I would like you to do very quickly is, I'll give you 10 seconds. Think of the best team you've been in. And think about why you identify that as the best team. I'm not gonna ask you. And as I go along, see if the science tells you and validates your position, okay? So, for 35 years, the science has been trying to answer this question. How do we turn a team of experts into an expert team? And in order to answer this question, we have to do three things. Understand the phenomena that we're turning this team into, teamwork. Try to come up with measurement. How do we assess this teamwork that we're developing? And finally, if we can develop measures and we can understand the phenomena, what can we do about it? Team training and those kind of things. So I'm gonna share with you what do we know about teamwork and what to do about. But this is the sign, the question. Okay, here's the first thing. The first nugget for you, the first practical thing, I hope. All teams are not created equal. And in fact, in our science, we make a distinction between a group and a team. For some of you, maybe an academic distinction, but for us, it's not. Because we put a group and teams on a continuum. And the continuum is task interdependency. So for us, a team has to have high task interdependence. Pilot cannot fly without co-pilot. Surgeon cannot complete surgery without anesthesiologist. I need somebody else's expertise. I need somebody else's information to complete the task. Groups, on the other hand, they have low or no task interdependence. It's a group of people that go to a conference room, for example, to talk about some ideas about how to solve a problem, and then they have no future. The reason this matters, where you are in this continuum, is because depending where you are, different competencies matter. So if you have no task interdependence, I don't need you. What matters is civility, right? Either let's get along or get out of the way. If we have high task interdependence, we can hate each other. We still have to fly the airplane. We still have to take care of the patient. And so one of the first things I will ask you to do is, where are you in this continuum? In healthcare, I will tell you the feedback that I get once I get out of the stage is, you know, I thought we were a team, but I think we're a group. We want to become a team. And so one of the first things you need to do is understand your coordination demands. Who does what, when, with whom? So that's the first diagnostic thing you need to understand. Who does what with whom? And this drives, right? This drives what you do with your teammates, or what you don't do with your teammates. I'm missing a picture there. I don't know what happened, but this gives you an idea. Now, I would also tell you that in my 20 years of doing healthcare, your biggest challenge, especially in family practice, is that sometimes high interdependence. Some other times, zero interdependence. And so you have to manage this fluctuation. And so in your practice, civility does matter as much as understanding who does what and who's gonna back me up and role clarity and those kind of things. Okay, so I hope that's the first nugget. So a few years ago, two, 3 years, with a colleague of mine, we said, how do we communicate this wealth of information to practitioners like you. And we invoke the seven C's of teamwork. This is not a model, not a theory, it's just a heuristic. A heuristic that helps, hopefully will help you think about teamwork. Think about, you know, which of the C's are we good at and which of the C's we are not, okay? And underneath each of the C's, there are competencies, things that matter. Let me walk you through this very quickly, and then I'll take a little dive into each one. So capability is about having the right people in your team. KSA is stands for knowledge, skills, and attitudes. This is about team composition. This is about who is going to be in my team. In fact, I can tell you, NASA wants answers to this. If I'm going to send four people to Mars, what kind of people we need to have? Two of this kind versus three of that one or one of this kind? This is about personality and those kind of things. But I will tell you that of all the C's, this is the less mature. NASA wants an algorithm. We don't have an algorithm. I don't have an algorithm to give you. But I tell you one thing that comes out of capability. You cannot be a good team member if you don't know your job. And I've been to a lot of places where they think we're doing teamwork training, team training, and really what they're doing is refreshing individual skills. Okay? So that's capability. Cooperation is about the mindset, attitudes. I like being in a team. I want to be in a team. I value the input from others, and I seek the input from others. Coordination is about the behaviors. Who does what? Who's going to help me? Who's going to back me up? It's about role clarity. Communication, this is an interesting one. It's about information exchange protocols. And let me make an editorial. About 90% or more of the phone calls that I get in healthcare, of organizations, healthcare systems, they say, we need your help. They call me and they say, we have a communication problem. I'm sure a lot of you have used that. We have a communication problem in our unit. This is my experience, and we can debate this. I'm beginning to think that invoking we have a communication problem is useless. It is not diagnostic, and you're in the diagnosis business. It's not diagnostic. When I go and take a deep dive into this so-called communication problem, what I find is the other C's are the problem. I don't like my boss. I don't know what to do. I hate my teammates. And so another practical thing I hope is that when you get out of here, you don't think, well, we do have a communication problem. I'm going to tell you the two things that matter in communication. So for us, communication is about the information exchange protocol, the timeliness of the information, the precision of the terminology, those kind of things. Teams do think. It's about team cognition. It's about the shared understanding of the task. Coaching is about team leadership. And the reason we, as a science, invoke coaching is because what do good coaches do in teams? They promote. They help. They care about their players. And finally, it's conditions. I don't invoke culture that much because it has a little baggage, but this is about organizational conditions. What do you reward? What do you incentivize? Those kind of things. Okay, let's take a little dive into each one. So in terms of capability, of course, smart, talented, capable people matter. Okay, but here's something that we're beginning to find. If you assemble a team of stars, the best engineers, the best technicians, the best nurses, we're beginning to get data that stars, performance goes down. When you compose a team of all stars, performance goes down. We're finding that in Wall Street. And the reason for that is, I'm gonna go a little quickly over this, but the reason for that is because you need people like this. This is about cooperation. You need people who have collective orientation. All of you, all of us, have a disposition. Either you're collective oriented or you're egocentric. I'm gonna simplify a little bit. So if you're collective-oriented, you like being in teams, you want to be in a team, you seek and value the input from others. If you're egocentric, which I'm sure nobody is here, it's a lone wolf that no matter what you do, does not engage in teamwork. And so the bad news of this is that collective orientation is a selection issue. By and large, you cannot train it. And I can tell you there's a lot of industries trying to come up with a test of teamwork, including AAMC. The American Association of Medical Colleges is trying to validate for 2021, 22, somewhere under, a test for medical students that they will need to pass in order to get admitted to medical school, a teamwork test. So why you need this? So let me use a sports analogy. So I was reading Michael Jordan's biography a few years ago. We've been reading a lot about sports. And I found a paragraph where he says, and everybody knows about Michael Jordan, right? Where he says, it wasn't until we got Scottie Pippen that we began to win championships. And if you know anything about Scottie Pippen, he retired. He was a great defensive player, lowest scorer. I think his average career was 8, 9, 10 points. Great defensive player, like I said. But he only had the most assists. He passed the ball consistently. So this star, Michael Jordan, needed somebody who was collective-oriented, who could pass the ball. So your teams, you need somebody that's going to do this. Support. Pass the ball. Okay? So that's collective orientation. Collective efficacy. This is, by the way, all the citations are meta-analysis. Eh? So, collective efficacy, this is the most powerful predictor that we have in our science. So collective efficacy is confidence. It's the collective confidence that the team has that they can perform the task. So if they have confidence, what happens? People are motivated. They want to persevere. They keep going because they know they can do it. So one of the things you need to do in your teams, not a practical thing, is build confidence. One simple way of building confidence is celebrating wins. A two-minute thing that you stop, hey, that was great that we did. Just to celebrate the wins. Okay, psychological safety. This is a big one in healthcare. Psychological safety is the license that you have to speak up. This is about having a difficult conversation about a patient or about a situation that we're about to embark in, where you're free to say those hard things and nothing will happen. So again, this is license to speak up. I think this is the big one in healthcare, by the way, in my experience. So, look at this. Meta-analysis just came out. 136 studies combined. And what did it find? That psychological safety leads to better performance, no surprise. Psychological safety leads to OCBs. This stands for organizational citizenship behaviors. Means that when there's psychological safety, people go above and beyond their job. They do other things. Psychological safety leads to information sharing, to learning. Of course, we have these difficult conversations, and we're going to learn from it. Okay? Now, some of you might think, what leads to psychological safety? Well, this meta-analysis found three things. Of course, the leader. Again, I said at the beginning, leaders make or break teams. So what the leader says matters. So I can tell you, when I was working for the Navy, we could manipulate in 8 seconds when the pilot will go into the cockpit, whether the co-pilot was going to speak up or not. In 8 seconds. It's just one phrase. Peer support is another one, of course. If Kyle and I are going to have, we're going to scream at each other. We're going to have a very emotional conversation about something. I know that after that, we can still have a glass of wine and be okay. So your peers is critical. And finally, is role clarity. I need to know how, you know, what Kyle knows. And he needs to know what I know. Because, again, if we're going to have this difficult conversation, we need to know our boundaries. But I want to make a distinction here. So this is about trust. Trust is when you give others the benefit of the doubt. Psychological safety is when others give you the benefit of the doubt. So they're similar, but a little different. And that's what you need to worry about. And by the way, that's what Google found. So if you Google, this is going to sound funny, Google psychological safety, it will take you to a website where it has guidelines and everything about how to create psychological safety. So if we had time here, I would like Andrew Taylor to spend 3 minutes talking about how would you boost psychological safety. So when you get back to your units, to your systems, and to your organizations, to your practices, spend 10 minutes talking about this. How do you boost psychological safety? What do you need to do to create psychological safety? I'm going to skip that one, in the interest of time. OK, I'm going to this one. So this is interesting, meta-analysis, two of them. When you have interpersonal conflict, performance goes down, of course. When you have process-related conflict, performance goes down. We don't, people don't come on time. We don't turn in the report on time. That's process-related. When you have task-related conflict, we don't agree on the procedure. We don't agree on the analysis we're going to do. It depends. And it depends on whether you have psychological safety. So task conflict might be good. It's just that you have to have psychological safety. Two meta-analyses on that. Okay, so this is communication. So I'm going to tell you a story. I was in Vegas doing research. And as a Peruvian, I'm a foodie. I like food. So I went to this nice restaurant, open kitchen concept in Vegas. Everybody is sitting, in a tasting menu. You know, they bring you 22 things, very little, and you barely taste the things, and they charge you a lot of money for that. And I love that. So we're facing everything, and I was there 2.5 hours with another colleague of mine, with a team research, and we said, 2.5 hours, not a word was said in the kitchen. Not a word. So finally, I said to my waiters, I'm a professor. I study these things. Can somebody come and talk to us about this? He brought the sous chef. And I said, hey, listen, I've been here 2.5 hours. You guys don't talk. He said, of course. His words. We're like an orchestra. We know the menu. We know who needs the plate, who to pass the plate. Everything's orchestrated. Zero communication. So take away. The best teams I've seen are quiet. That doesn't mean there's communication going. It's just they're quiet. What matters in teams, in communication, is the sharing of unique information. So what happens in teams when they say we have a communication problem is you get bogged down talking about the same thing over and over and over. When somebody will say, time out. Does somebody here have details that we haven't discussed? So a meta-analysis came out to show information sharing is there. And the second thing that matters is closed-loop communication. You know, I sent a message to Kyle. I know Kyle got it. And he sent me a message that he got it. Closed-loop communication. Those are the two things that matter. Now, teams do think. And very quickly, let me tell you, the biggest hallmark, in my opinion, of teams is that they have a shared mental model. When you have a shared mental model of the task, your teammates, and what you need to do, then you can anticipate the needs of your teammates and you pass information to your teammates without requesting it. That's what's going on in the kitchen. I've seen that in OR, when the scalpel is ready before requested. What is the no-look pass in basketball? Two individuals who read how the defense is positioned, how much time they have left on the clock, and they execute a task without saying, hey, there goes the ball. So and this is trainable, you want your teams to have a shared understanding of what goes on. There have been 4 meta-analyses on this that have shown complete link to performance when your team have a shared understanding of the tax. And this is conditions. So what happens, what the senior leadership team does matters. Can I borrow 10 more minutes or this, or 5 minutes? Who is the, I think I'm supposed to be done at 10:30, but I like to, I need to, I keep going, who cares? Okay. Here, I want to, so here are the 7 C's. Again, there's actually, I'm proud of this. Some of the hospitals are saying they have the C of the month. Some hospitals are beginning to do some of this. Actually, University of Washington uses some of this in the NICU. Okay. Not too long ago, somebody asked me a question. And he said, so you're the expert on teamwork. Okay. And the question was like this. Which, if I put a gun to your head, which of these issues is the most important? And I said, wow, my life depends on this. And he told me, you can only say one. Guess which one I did. I said, this is the audience participation part of the program. Who said conditions? This is the first time somebody is. I said conditions. You can have, and the reason is, you can have the best team training in the world. You can have the best teams, the best teammates that you want. If the organization is not aligned to support teamwork, the behaviors will fade away. We are very good at reading, I'm gonna raise my voice through this. We're very good at reading what our bosses want. And according to that, we adjust our behavior. So I've done a couple of studies in the hospitals where we deploy team training. Right after team training, man, they were executing all kinds of teamwork behaviors. 6 months later, they were still doing some stuff. A year later, 18 months later, zero. So, big message here. If you're a leader, if you're the head of a unit or of a practice or whatever, you make a difference. But I don't want you to be depressed. Because you can say, I cannot change my boss, I cannot change my CEO, I cannot change my CMO. But there are things you can do locally to begin to think. So I think that there are 2 type of conditions. The local ones, that maybe that you control in your unit, and then there are broader ones. Okay. So now let me give you a checklist. 10 things that we know effective teams do. It's going to be a little repetition, but I'm going to make a few other points. The number one killer of teamwork, any industry, any team across the world that I've seen and that science tells you, is the lack of clarity of roles and responsibilities. This is a 2-minute, 3-minute intervention that team leaders could do. And I usually say, now, I have a career because of this. This is so simple to fix, and yet we still have problems with this. So, you want to fix some of the problems, make sure people understand their roles and responsibilities. Number two killer of teamwork is the lack of a compelling reason to be a team. As a team researcher, I will tell you, not all organizational problems are solved by teams. And organizations tend to say, oh, this is a complex problem, let's launch a team. So you have to have a shared vision, valued vision, to be a team. So you have to have a common purpose. Here are the behaviors. The next slide is going to show you 8-9 behaviors of what a team leader does. So how do you create psychological safety? One way is when the team leader self-corrects first. He or she says, that thing we just did, I didn't do well there. I should have done this and this and that, and next time I'm going to do that, and so forth. When the team leader self-corrects first, usually gives license to others to speak up. Okay? Here's another takeaway. This is a big one, in my mind. Teams that engage in this discipline of pre-briefing, performing, and debriefing. I'll perform those that don't. Who does this? Airlines, military, nuclear power. All of these organizations that need high reliability. They pre-brief, even if it's a minute. They perform and they debrief. Collective, they have shared mental models, information exchange, I already told you, share unique information. Here's another one. A couple of studies have come up. The deployment of the team, when you launch it, we say, okay, now we're gonna do this. That's where you create psychological safety, share mental models, role clarity, it's in the deployment. So the kickoff meeting should not be just, hey, go get them. You should spend a little more time talking about these things. And you have to have the right conditions. So there are the seven C's. So okay, some advice. So of course, team training is a big one. But how many of you know about team steps? Just to disclose, I was the scientist behind team steps. But I'm a fan of team training. So it doesn't matter whether you use team steps or some other program. But I want to make a distinction here that is important. Team training does not equal team building. And I'm sure a lot of you have been in team building exercises where you go to the wilderness in North Carolina and you wine and dine for 3 days and you do tasks that have nothing to do with the job, right? Ropes and things like that. In Orlando, where I lived for a long time, there were three companies completely devoted to team building. One around horses, one around dolphins, and one around the kitchen. I did a meta-analysis on team building a long time ago and found zero correlation between activities and performance in the team building and things back on the job. Needless to say, I got a lot of hate mail from consultants. But what I want to tell you here is team building is about role clarity. You learn a little bit in these 3 days of wining and dining, you learn about your teammates. What do they do? But team training is about skill building. It's about all the competencies, essentially, that I've talked to you about. Now, when we build team steps is really gives you, as an individual, team-based skills that you can transport, hopefully, to one team to the other. It's about that. And so, whatever you, whether you use team steps or you design your own team training, what you need to make sure is it's about team competencies. And I've laid out a few there. I hope, so this is how I phrase this. The most simple, elegant, powerful, yet underutilized technique that you have to improve teamwork is debriefing. It could be 1 minute, it could be 3 minutes, it could be 30 minutes, it could be 3 hours. But what you can do getting out, as you get out of this door in about, the break is coming up, this is what you can do, debrief. And maybe you can ask those three questions. What worked? What can be improved? And what can we do differently? If you Google healthcare debriefing, you'll find hundreds of studies of in healthcare. They're trying to improve the structure of it. What are the elements that need to be in a debriefing? How long it should be? There are people who have checklists. People who have posters. I've been in ORs. Well, after the OR, they go to a poster, and they go through a number of questions. There's, I don't know if this is operational or not, there are apps that if the teammates don't debrief right after an event, when they go home, they can answer the questions, and once everybody answers, the algorithm tells you whether you have a shared mental model and you need to talk. But no matter what, I hope that at least you get this from this talk. Debriefing is what is going to help you. And if I have time, I will talk a little more about this. Two meta-analyses have come out Teams that debrief outperform those that don't by 25%. More evidence than that. This is what you need to do. It's really a reflection on what happened, okay? The last bullet is what, this is a bumper sticker line that I created. Organizations get the behaviors, cognitions, and attitudes that they measure and reinforce. You want teamwork in your unit, in your practice, measure it, reinforce it. Simulation is a big way of training this, and you don't have to have a big dome, millions of dollars. There are games that allow you now to teach this, and there are games in healthcare. But this is a way to accelerate expertise. If you have some questions about this, I'll be glad to answer. Understand the coordination demands. You know, this is a journey. It takes time. This is difficult to manage. It's not an event. It won't, you know, team training alone won't do it, by the way. Team steps alone won't do it. You have to, I haven't reported this here, but I did a meta-analysis of team training in general. And I found that team training in general improved team performance by 20%, which is a whopping effect. But there's still 80% left. You need to do something else. So team training is not a panacea. It won't help you. You need the conditions. There's a science out there. I want to put a plug for this. American Psychologist, which is the flag journal for psychology, I did a special issue with a primary care physician out of the University of Rochester, Susan McDaniel. We did a special issue on teamwork because she was president of APA, the American Psychological Association, and she wanted to have teamwork integrated care. One of her teams. Anyway, we did a special issue. There are three, and the special issue was focused on discoveries. What do we know? There are three papers there on healthcare. One around ICU, one around primary care, and the other one is about NICU, I believe. I forgot already. Like I said, curriculum training alone won't do it. It's about conditions. So one of the things that probably you could do also when you get back is, if you want to use the C's as a group, but think about what conditions we need to have in order to ensure that we work as a team. I spent a little time in primary care, and your interdependence is sequential, by and large. You know, the patient goes, it's like an air traffic controller, right? So you need to understand your coordination demands and what to do about it, and how to organize yourself that it promotes the kind of things that I've been talking about. So, how can I help you? Thank you.